I'm Pastor Lang, Director of Missions, and have been asked to introduce Dr. Odom. 30 years ago, when I graduated from this seminary, the city of St. Louis had almost 850,000 population. Today it's about 423,000. And as you look in at the ski slide in the number of people, and then begin to look at the Lutheran population in our churches, it shows an identical kind of decline. The number of children enrolled in our day schools, the number of schools, we've had a couple of churches close, and we look at a number of congregations that simply struggle to keep their doors open. They're small in number. They're each kind of protecting their own turf and maintaining a ministry. Everybody is doing every little part of it. And we've had studies made of various parts of the city, and ultimately basically just said there must be a better way. And as an attempt to model a different form of ministry that isn't so parochial, that isn't so inwardly directed, we put on the boards a concept that we referred to as the Luther Plan. Lutherans united to teach, help, enrich, and reach out in the name of our Savior. Dr. Odom was called as the director of urban ministry to put this plan into being. Some of the stuff that we had on the drawing board is no more. The plan itself is flexible and continues to change and expand as it grows. And the whole idea, though, of joining hands with fellow Christians across parish lines, of striving to develop leadership and focus on how the leadership within each local congregation can serve to help grow that ministry, is the basic concept. Dr. Odom comes to us from the English District, where he served in Chicago, was on the Board of Missions there, and we'll let you tell what he does and how he does it.
Thank you, Pastor Lane. In introducing this whole subject about modeling a new concept, a new approach in urban ministry, it's important for us to note what sociologists are telling us and to pay attention to what they're saying. Sociologists are saying that man was not intended to live in an urban scene. Basically, he was to be an agrarian, not to be clustered up the way we see people clustered up now in the projects of Chicago, or either in the Vaughan projects here in St. Louis. Just too many people put together, piled together, and it only invokes crime, misuse of drugs, and destruction of family relationships. So man was not created to live in these environments, but we are there anyway. Regardless of whether we know it or not, the urban scene is not going to change. It's not going to go away. It's going to intensify and develop and redevelop over the years to come. It's speculated that by the year 2010, just a few years from now, that whole stretch of land between Milwaukee and Detroit would be one giant megalopolis, one city, teeming with hundreds of thousands of people. That's hard to imagine. And somehow ministry has to take place in these situations. And we have to shape and reshape ministry to meet these demands. On one area, you have the condos where you have the pancake relationship, but that's based on wealth. On the other area, you have people who are put together because of their economic situation. And if you've ever tried to work in the urban scene, you know that sometimes it's very difficult to get into an apartment. It's equally difficult to get into a project and sometimes to get out. You have to try to go in, and you have to try to do ministry there. You have to try to reach people with that saving message that Jesus Christ is Savior. And you have to devise a way and a means whereby you can do it. We have to shape and reshape our ministry. I just want to give you an example. In 1968, when I left Alabama to come to Chicago to take the call at Faith, I came into a situation where you had 59 or 69 elderly whites. in a situation where the congregation itself had turned itself off to the community, saying they didn't want us there now, why do they want us there now? I say, I'm not they. I'm here to carry on the ministry, to conduct the ministry. A way of ministering to that community had to be discovered, and it was discovered by accident. And I suggest that many of our shapings of ministry and how we develop our ministerial skills and devices will be accidental. It so happened that the parsonage yard there in Chicago was the largest one on the block. And my kids by that time were staff steps, so high. And all the kids in the community flocked into my yard, into the parsonage yard, because there was ample room to play. There goes a ball through the window. Here's one digging a hole like a dirt dauber. I'm a nervous wreck, and who comes to me one day? She says, Spunky. When she gets to talking fast, she says, Skunky. She says, Spunky, I have an idea. After many months now of toiling with the community, not knowing where we were going to go with this congregation and a church building that seated 550 people, and you could least expect about 35 at the most on a Sunday morning, what are we going to do? What inroads are we going to make? She comes and she says, I have an idea. I said, right. What's the idea? She said, I'm going to take the kids into the church and teach them some songs. Little did I know at that moment that ministry was being shaped, and ministry would be focused on a bunch of human beings who would be the lifeline of that congregation now. From that initial thrust by my wife, a little choir was started. Not one baptized shy, remember. One Sunday, they were in the choir stall there, and they started singing, Jesus loves me, this I know. All the little common songs that children would normally know and be taught. Not one baptized child. To make a long story short, from that initial effort, we gained these children. We gained some mothers. And sooner or later, and later, we gained some fathers. So my philosophy developed on ministry from that initial thrust that in the urban scene, it is best to go after the children first. Don't attempt a nuclear family. In many instances, you won't find an existent nuclear family of mother, a father, of siblings, an iguana, a dog, two cars, and a boat. You know, all these things go together to make a nuclear family. You know, we got to have all these things around us. So you have to go after the kids first. Why? What's the psychology of it? The psychology of it is this. They're easier to train. Their minds are not shaped by stereotypes. And they like to be paraded and shown. And once they are paraded and shown, especially in a church context, eventually the mother is going to come to see what's going on with her child, whom she is allowed to come to this church and allowed to be baptized. She wants to come and see what's going on with that child. And that's how we got the mothers. The fathers were the hardest nuts to get. That Church Now Faith in Chicago is not a giant church, but it grew from that embryonic group now where it has four choirs singing every Sunday. It surrounded itself with music. That was the ministry that I saw shaping up, and I fed into it myself because I saw that something was going on here. So they have what they call the Cherubs, the Angelics, the Young People's Choir, and the Senior Choir. And the Senior Choir are those kids that first started with that Jesus Love Me Choir. Now, I have to say this, too, before I really get into the thrust of what we're all about here. One Sunday, I was sitting in the chancel after these choirs had all developed. And I was so sure that only one choir was singing this Sunday because I put it in the bulletin. No Lutheran church has more than one choir singing on a Sunday. That is, of course, unless you got a shout Kyrie. I noticed that all of a sudden, here's everybody there, all the choirs in place. I said, well, they just like to sit there, but only one's supposed to sing this Sunday. The Angelics started out. They sang one song, and then they went into another song. Great. I start fidgeting as a Lutheran pastor usually does because we're 59-59 oriented. next another choir gets up. And it goes into its two numbers. Then the third choir gets up. I said, wait, who's in control here? I'm the pastor. After the fourth choir sings, that's eight songs, right? Between the epistle and the God. I mean, the epistle and the reading of the gospel. I'm frowning, I'm fidgeting, I'm worried about what the people out in the audience are thinking about, because they must say this is too much. The elders got me downstairs after the service, and there's this big, tall Herman Thomas who towers over me, looking like a football player. And he looks down at me literally, and he says, we like it. What's your problem? The Soviets have decided to slow down. Ministry had been developed. No longer can faith expect to have a one-hour service. Everyone who goes there knows that at least it's 1:45 or 2-hour service. There's rejoicing and a ministry that goes on, but shaped by the community and the people who came to that church. Now, what happened at Faith cannot happen at every church, nor in every community. You must know the people. In this situation, I knew from whence they came. So I'm saying ministry must be shaped to meet the demands and the situation of the people around you. There's a unique ministry today that I want to introduce to you. We've introduced it as the Luther Plan. Lutherans United to Teach, Help, Enrich, and Reach Out. It has gone through some laboring pains of trying to get it off the ground. Anything you put on paper and it's not done spontaneously causes some ripples in the water. By design, this Luther plan calls for seven congregations. It's painless. A limit of seven congregations. Now we have three: Holy Sacrament, St. Stephen's, and Transfiguration. The idea is to have a staff. I am the director. Pastor Vic Belton is the director of youth and evangelism. And we are to add one new person each year to the staff that will take in outreach and different areas of service that we can give to the community, and also deaconess. You know, the whole thing of people who are supposed to have expertise in their fields. We have come into this plan now in the beginning of the third year now with some great hopes of what could take place. And I have developed this kind of scheme that helps us understand that we're dealing with this concept of ministry in three phases and in three periods. Three phases. Work of the Summer Institute of Linguistics there. Julie, just how urgent is the need for more people to become literacy workers? I'm sure you now, the three phases are based on the negatives. The negatives are over there to your left. Worldwide, I would. These congregations were in a period of stagnation.
I don't know the other areas, what the needs are in Asia and other countries, but
my definition of stagnation is when the congregation has peaked off.
Can you help me understand?
And now begins to have nothing in attendance as far as membership is concerned.
But they know
no kind of plan of action or whatever, just the faithful few who come to church. I never will forget when I was in considering the call. I came there in one November, late November, and I could count the people that were in Transfiguration, 23.
Well, if they have no such help, sometimes.
And I wonder just where in the world was this church going to go? What was I even thinking about in trying to accept a call to this place? A period of stagnation. Same thing going on with St. Stephen's and her Holy Sacrament. People just seem to be in a state of apathy.
And then the scriptures can sometimes.
Period of stagnation when you can depend on district for everything.
Have a team working along
to give you what you need at a given situation. You don't try to do anything. You're the lethargic. You don't have any kind of impetus whatsoever.
So that it becomes a community.
So that was the first phase that we understood. And we move over here to the right in a few minutes to see what we're trying to do in trying to change this. The second phase that I've determined is dehumanization. Dehumanization. You feel like you're worthless, that you should no longer exist. This was the attitude of these congregations. We have no reason, no purpose for being, no mission statement. Every congregation, large or small, should have a mission statement that defines what it is doing, where it is doing it, and for what purpose. It's not enough to say we are here to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. You may have to enlarge that, embellish upon it in order to make sure that people understand exactly what you mean by preaching or proclaiming the gospel. You may have to consider that there's some social outreach. You may have to consider that there's some community action that has to take place. You may consider that there has to be some child care. All of these kind of implications. But this feeling of dehumanization was there.
That has regretfully happened.
And the third phase is the most dramatic as far as these congregations. They were at the point of culmination. And in other words, of closure.
And as we encouraged them the other day, they don't have to have a degree in education already.
People were even talking about going to other churches, joining other existing congregations. Because all of this had taken place, the stagnation, the dehumanization, the culmination. We can't do anything else here. It's all over. I have developed a plan that I'm going to give to you in a few minutes that I devised and sent to Reverend Ed Lang when I first came, that answered these three on your left. And the first one is revitalization. Revitalization is that period that we're going through now. And I term that period 1987 through 1989. We're just about on target. Revitalizing that stagnated situation. Trying to get people to understand that something is going on here. On any given Sunday at Transfiguration now, you can expect 150, 175 people.
Huntington Beach, California,
any given Sunday.
92647.
You just heard the choir. That's one choir. There are going to be four choirs at Transfiguration.
I'm John.
That's the voices of inspiration you heard last night. And they have a senior choir. But all of that's important to the life of that congregation. And believe it or not, that's not an hour congregation either, right?
Join KFUO weekly.
You have to stay longer because there are many more things going on. But that, too, will not work in St. Stephen's. St. Stephen's congregation is in that period of revitalization. But you cannot do the same thing at St. Stephen's that you do at Transfiguration.
On KFUO.
Nor can you do the same thing that you do at St. Stephen's and at Transfiguration at Holy Sacrament. Three different autonomous congregations made up of different people who want different things. I ask them, what do you want to do? So that we can help, Belton and I can help you get it done. Because as now we are the only people on staff. So we are extended. We're trying to put our hands in so many different pockets. The thing that helps us most in getting to these ministries is that it calls into design for our preaching pastors. Now, I had some problems with the definition of a preaching pastor. You cannot have a preaching pastor because in my definition of pastorhood, there can only be one pastor. But Belton and I are considered the pastors of all three congregations with preaching pastors. And that's tricky. That's tricky. And let me say just something about that in this period of revitalization. This didn't happen all of a sudden that we got these preaching pastors aboard because I was doing most of the preaching at Transfiguration. Belton was doing most of the preaching at St. Stephen's. And Holy Sacrament had a preacher coming out of the International Center. But fortunately, we were able, through our contacts with Reverend Jim McDaniels, who is now the preaching pastor at St. Stephen's, Reverend Dr. Richard Dickerson, who is the preaching pastor at Transfiguration, and Reverend Jimmy Wilson, who is preaching pastor now at Holy Sacrament. This frees us up to do a lot more than we would have been able to do otherwise. How do you avoid in this period of revitalization conflicts? How do you avoid conflicts and as to who's in charge? Who is the pastor? Well, we easily get around that by saying to the preaching pastors, the issues come to you and then to us. We do not let people play us one against the other. Go to the preaching pastor who, in all practicalhood, is the one who looks at his job description and says as much as possible. Now, when he can't function at that much as possible level, that's when we come in.
that clue is, after a lengthy...
I take care of most of the 18 and 19 sick and shed ends at Transfiguration because Dr. Dickinson can't do it. He's at the International Center. If something's going on at St. Stephen's and Reverend McDaniels can't do it, then Vic Belton, will go right in and pick it up. There's a period of revitalization. And I believe that some great things are happening, but they cannot happen on the same level at every congregation. Because you have different people and different areas. The 1 hour or more service will not work at St. Stephen's. It's got to be a 1 hour service. Have to know the people there. Now, what's that second phase of this period on your right here that we're looking at? It's a period of what I call a period of stabilization. And that's analyzed to be from 1990 until 1992. What are we planning to get done by that time? Well, with these three congregations, according to the plan that I've devised, by 1992, each of these three congregations, according to the plan, is to be totally self-sustaining. And what do I mean by totally self-sustaining? Not one of the congregations, 1 year after we got here, received one penny directly from the district. 2 years before we came, Transfiguration, for example, received $10,000. The year before we came, they received $5,000. They don't know it, but I'm the one that suggested to Reverend Lane that they get nothing the next year. And when they looked at me when I announced it to you, you cannot expect any direct subsidy. They said, what? Because they were going back to this dehumanization. Wanted to get back in that same old lethargic way of doing things. Because it's easier to go to the district office and say we need a roof on the church instead of going out and getting it done yourself. So by 1992, this period of stabilization, we hope will be able to come into existence and that each congregation can be self-supported to the extent that it not only receives no subsidy from the district, but that it returns money to the district.
Be with us every weekday afternoon.
And not only that, a third step to that is that the Luther plan itself becomes self-supported. What is it causing the Missouri District to carry out this plan? This year we average as a budget to $85,000. If it goes according to Hoyle, we will say that by the year 1992, it'll be upwards of $100,000, $125,000. Hopefully the churches will be able to fund it. Not only the preaching pastors' responsibilities and their payments, but also the staff. It's a dream. But it's a way of getting that ministry where people buy into it and say, this is ours, this is our way of reaching into the community, this is our way of growing. Third period, period of mobilization. Mobilizing the congregations where they move from this period of stabilization to church planting. That period, 1993 to year 2000. By the year 2000, we want each of these congregations to mother a new mission on the north side. Some have said, you don't need any more churches on the north side of St. Louis. I don't agree with that. I think you need new missions. I'm not saying buildings either. I'm saying there could be other outlets and other points of outreach in the community whereby this church can have that kind of responsibility of saying we have grown to the extent now that we are able to reach out on our own resources without any district manipulation and saying this is what we started over here. It can be a soup kitchen. It can be a resale store. These can all be turned into ministries. Now you say, is all of this possible? It's possible simply because we have what we call a parish leadership forum. The parish leadership forum is made up of representatives from all three congregations. They literally dictate the policy. They are forced to prod me whereby I can prod Pastor Lang, whereby he can prod the mission board. In other words, these are supposed to be people representing their congregations who really are sincere about ministry and want to see that it gets done as quickly as possible, but not necessarily at the point of either one of these over here, stagnation, dehumanization, or culmination. But are able to live on the right side of the ledger and saying, we may not be yet at the point of mobilization, we may not yet be at the point of stabilization, but we're going to work toward it, and this is what we're trying to do to get it done. We recently, a few months ago, we sent out a call to Mr. John Brazil to become the director of Christian education. Mr. Brazil labeled on that call for so many months that this parish leadership forum came to me one day and said, now we're tired of coming in and asking you to find out what's going on with that call. Do we have to go to Chicago to find out what's going on with Mr. Brazil? And that push got me back on the phone again. I said, John, I got to have an answer. These people are on my case. They were sincere, blood in their eyes. I said, you got to give me an answer. So he finally declared. So the call has to go out to some other people. But that's the kind of organization that you have to make something like this work. Now, I'm going to pass this out to you, and I want to open it up now for questions that you may have. Any things that you might want to share? While the papers are being passed around, I want you to know that the Luther plan has a hymn. The hymn is written to the tune of Children of the Heavenly Father. You don't have it there before you, but it reads like this. Clustered in God's work together, congregations find their shelter. On the north side of St. Louis in the Show Me State, Missouri. Preaching Christ, man's lasting treasure, teaching God's love, endless measure. Offering hope and life forever is the Luther plan's endeavor. Homeless children, hungry people, unwed mothers neath our steeple. Anguished voices blend together. Find us jobs, food, clothing, shelter. There is then no need to pity those who labor in the city. God has promised to be with them and to bless their efforts for him. Help us, Lord, to claim the vision and rely on your provision. Grant us steadfastness that we must toil in love till you receive us. Now, I want to open it up for questions. I'd rather have more of a dialogue than a monologue going on here. So some things I deliberately did not touch in order that you may want to share with you. If you've had a chance to look at your paper. Yes.
Tell us more about the concept of preaching pastor.
Okay, good, excellent. The preaching pastor, by the definition, is one who agrees to take care of the preaching on Sundays and on other occasions as much as possible. He, it is understood, has a full-time job elsewhere. He has a job description that he agrees to as to how much work he can get done in a month's time. Assuming that he can take care of the Sunday morning services, he agrees to whether or not he can do X percentage number of amount of time in counseling, Bible study. If he's asked to do weddings, fine. If he's not asked to handle funerals, fine. That simply means that it falls on the two of us. As I said, I do most of the visitations at one church. Belton does it at another. But his primary responsibility is to make sure that we are freed up on Sundays. That doesn't mean that we never preach. For example, Sunday, I will not be around either one of the congregations. I'll be in Kinlock. Because they are considering now coming into the plan. I have to run them through a process of what they're doing and how they see ministry. And the next Sunday, God knows, I'll be somewhere else. So that preaching pastor is there. But during the week, we are on the scene while they are at work. You see how that works? So they agree with the congregation on the job description and how much they can do. Go ahead.
heavy, kind of like vacancy pastors under or working with a kind of distributed kind of official type position, perhaps?
Yeah, you can look at it that way. However, a vacancy pastor is assumes more responsibility than the preaching pastor. See, that's a note. It's a term that's not used so well. For example, I said I had trouble with it. He's basically to take care of the preaching needs of that church as much as possible, whereas a vacancy pastor agrees to do it on more or less a full-time basis. Go ahead.
Are these congregations that are similar in where they are in their outreach or ministry?
Great, that's a good question. Transfiguration is located in the Vaughan Project, Carr Square Village Project. Vaughan is on one side, Carr Square Village, a little better apartments, that's facing the church. And then you have O'Fallon Park, which is made up of a little higher level economically of group. Now that community itself is going through some change in that these people are going to be displaced in the Vaughan Project. If those of you who remember the Pruitt-Igoe projects of years ago that were blown down, these are supposed to be blown down. Carr Square Village, those leveled apartments, one-story apartments, will be torn down. O'Fallon Park, the higher level economic group, probably will stay. But what's to come into the Vaughan Square area or the Pruitt-Igoe area that's leveled now and nothing there? The change in scene around Transfiguration is upper middle class. The ministry will change. Only two members of Transfiguration lives within 5 miles. Only two. And those are just barely within 5 miles. You can run all over St. Louis and find Transfiguration's members. Creve Court and all over the place. Let me finish her question. As St. Stephen's is located in the central west end, which is also changing, which will also... It's more or less that college area, Washington U, St. Louis U, is coming around there where you would have these apartments built on the upper level, upper middle class. Holy Sacraments pretty much is stable in the sense now that this community faces change, but not very soon. Does that help you give it? And they are... Transfiguration is about a mile or so from St. Stephen's, and Holy Sacrament is about a half mile from there.
Yeah, you said, did you start off with 7 or 9?
No, that's the maximum we can have in the plan.
Why did not some of the other in that area?
Good question.
Going up?
All right. Fear.
Fear
of the unknown. You see, when the plan calls for a director, And various staff people who are to be the overseers in the operation of the plan, congregations began to feel the kind of pressure that comes from I guess that's a state of dehumanization. Are these guys going to come in and tell us what to do? Fear that the mission board is going to take over.
Coming at that from the other direction.
Okay.
Because of the strong feelings of parish autonomy, so what led the three to want to be at Quist? And what was the beginning of this?
I have to say it honestly, Ken, I don't think the congregations really understood from the outset what the plan was all about. We're just now beginning to get this ingrained in their minds. The people who heard the initial presentation by Reverend Lang are not the people who are now attending the Parish Leadership Forum. And it's a strange course of events. It was presented by Pastor Lang with the help of Dr. Dixon and some other people I guess in 85.
But the initiative came from outside.
The initiative came from the outside.
Was it vacant at the time?
No, it was vacant. Being served more or less on a rotation. Even Pastor Lang was doing some preaching, you know, in Transfiguration especially. It was a week-to-week thing and not much going on within the weekdays. So obviously there was no growth. It was just stagnation. We got a preaching service going on. Any church that's dark during the week, and maybe yours, is in trouble. You've got to have something going on. Later for the light beer. You got to let people know that, hey, something's going on here. If they see only the light, they don't see the lights on Sunday because you usually have a church on Sunday morning. But if you can present something like movies going on at the Holy Sacrament to get the kids in off the street on Saturday morning, sure, there's some hot dogs and popcorns that help lure them in. But some of those kids come into Sunday school. As a community center at Transfiguration. The day school, by the way, I didn't mention it at all, is located at St. Stephen's. They call it Central City Lutheran School. Supported by the other two congregations. And not all the time equally, because you have a preponderance of members from St. Stephen's.
If you're over 40, your symptoms, it may be too late. Listen, we know colon cancer isn't the first thing on your mind. We just don't want it to be the last. Learn more. Contact the American Cancer Society for a free brochure. A public service message of the Ad Council and the American Cancer Society.
All right, I'd like to go out of this. The mission board concentrated on the north side simply because of the sudden drop and decline of people in that area. The pitiful conditions of the congregation demanded some immediate remedy. Sure, there are a lot of areas on the north side and south side of St. Louis that would need help. But the hope, the long-range hope, is that eventually there will not only be a Luther plan, but it will be a Luther plan zone one, Luther plan zone two. It's possible, but we understand. There is no way we could cover more than we cover now with the two of us. And when I say the two of us, because we have to do all of the other stuff that the preaching pastors can't do. And God knows, they may be on the road sometime. We come up with three or four funerals. We got to handle it. We can't sit there and freeze about it waiting till they get back. We have to jump right in there because the people expect it. They know we are there. Not to put you off, there's always a possibility that you can, I would suggest that you go through the process and talk to Pastor Lane, who's probably going to tell you the same thing I'm telling you. But I would not discount the possibility at all. Because since you are there, and I may add also that when this plan was put together, it had to be congregations that did not have full-time pastors. But now it calls for congregations who do have full-time pastors or part-time pastors to be involved. But right now, we are understaffed.
You had some unique advantages going for you, having an international center with a few extra clergy to call on for preaching pastors.
That's what I was alluding to in the beginning. This plan would not work everywhere.
Of course, some other places might have a synodical school that would be a source of this additional manpower. Or maybe if it's in northern Arkansas, maybe they've got an awful lot of high-powered retired preachers.
No. I've looked into that too, and I would suggest that just as you have the laborers for Christ putting up the physical plants, you could also have laborers for Christ doing spiritual work. There are a lot of retired pastors around who would be glad to just move into a room of somebody's house and carry on a ministry.
I'd like to find some of them.
It has to be networked, but I'm sure they're there.
A follow-up question there. Congregations like us in the inner city that are having a tough time of it. St. John's and Emmanuel have cooperated closely on a few things. We thought about trying to involve Redeemer, the world, the same circuit. It's a little bit late, I guess, to involve Hope and Good Shepherd. He's taking it over. And, but we had thought of trying to work out something that we could do in common, since we are in somewhat similar neighborhoods with somewhat similar problems.
See, the word common. That has not been, I don't want to give you the false impression now that working with these three congregations was peaches and cream. I just mentioned that three different congregations made of different people, different lifestyles. Doing things together has been the most difficult thing for us to get done. St. Stephen's is mixed, the other two are black. That has nothing whatsoever to do with it. It's just a historical thing. They will not do anything together. The parish leadership forum is it. We feel so proud when we can get four or five representatives from each of these congregations together in one room at one time. But they say they're going to have a picnic this year together. That has to be demonstrated. But as far as going from Transfiguration to St. Stephen's and vice versa, now there's a better mixture of people going from St. Stephen's and Transfiguration to Holy Sacrament. And that's been demonstrated through the Advent service and the Lenten services. Why is that? I can tell you why. Holy Sacrament is a little church, probably about as large as from here to the back door. You know it. Made up of widows, elderly widows, black women who are determined to keep that church going. Now, St. Stephen's would not go to Transfiguration as a rule simply because Transfiguration style is different. And you don't want to go to somebody's church that you don't agree with that loose style they have of worship. Transfiguration feels the same thing about St. Stephen's. They're dull over there. I don't want to go over there. And Holy Sacrament's a little church sitting over here saying, y'all come, we ain't gonna bother. Supporters said that would increase grassroots contributions. We'll even prepare you some Kool-Aid or something. You know, they're not gonna bother. However, this church is the one that came out of the High Church of St. Philip, if you know St. Philip. These are the people who came off of that, splintered off from St. Philip. You know, with the high liturgical service. But they're not going to bother. There's no threat in the world. But there seems to be that hostility between these two, St. Stephen's and Transfiguration. We stay in our place, you stay in yours. You stay in the church too long. You stay in the church too short, and you don't do anything. So, but trying to get them to do things together, and God bless you if in Kansas City you can get that done, but that's going to be tough. But we're proud too, and from another angle, that these congregations have grown numerically. As I said, Transfiguration, I keep lifting this one up because this is the one I have confidence in that will meet the schedule on time. I'm not saying that others won't. I'm just simply saying this one has the most potential at this particular time to reach this point of mothering that congregation by the year 2000. It's grown. We've had a number of baptisms, accessions, and so forth. One member came to me and the other day and said, "Pastor, you know, we really getting middle class now. We have Janice Huff, who is the weather forecast on Channel 5. We have Sergeant Moore, who's the head of the homicide department and so forth. We got this person." I said, wait. I said, "Lest you forget, you all came out of Pruitt-Igoe projects." I said, "Don't get carried away with who you got in here with tiles and so forth and what kind of city offices they have. Your ministry is still right here with these people. And don't you forget it, even though you stay further than 5 miles away. This is where you still work until that ministry changes. And when it changes, you continue to devise a way where you can reach the people. So let's not get uppity. You know how sometimes we think that this is the way it's supposed to be."
Other than the probes, how else have these congregations benefited from things coming to
They have, the design of the project, I think, fulfills that. They have received the services far and above anything that they will be able to support financially. In other words, I personally conduct 3 Bible classes. They have 4 Bible classes going all together. One is lay oriented, and I conduct the 3. They would not have this. They do have the opportunity to have in their community center Mr. Rogers, who's the principal of the Central City, which is a part of this Luther plan, by the way. He comes in on Wednesdays and conducts things with the neighborhood kids.
Good afternoon. 6 minutes after
I think this is all beneficial. And apart just from the financial thing is that we can intercede for these congregations. And what I mean by intercede, we run into interference problems sometimes. For example, Transfiguration wanted to get some loan to do some repairs around the church. They didn't have bathrooms on the upper level. Ladies had to go all downstairs and all in the dark quarters and halls and so forth. So I went to the mission board. I went to the mission board and asked Pastor Lane, "What about a CEF loan?" They got $40,000. They got the upper bathrooms. They got the sanctuary that's air conditioned. They got carpet. They got a remodeled chancel. All of this stuff. It looks different. All of this is advantage. And I go a step further. It's exposure. They're demonstrating not only to themselves and to other people that they're bringing to church, that they're proud now. They're not back over there in that left corner. They're proud. Sometimes I wonder, as I said before, I'm worried that they get too proud. But they're proud now. In other words, they have a feeling of weight. Invited folk. They don't have to worry about whether they go down the steps and get raped or something. Or go down them. If you ever been to Transfiguration, I don't know what I'm talking about. But it's dark down. And you don't want to send your wife or your daughter down those steps, you know, because that place is big. There's so many holes in and out of it. So that's a feeling of the way. When you want to go to the back, oh, come on, here's the restroom around here. It's interesting. You see? But these things help out. And at all 3 congregations, that's going up. I'm proud of it. But I don't want to leave you with the impression either that we have done everything right. That cannot happen. That can't happen. We have not exactly followed the book in doing everything that we did, but we had to do what we had to do in order to make it work. Anytime you put something down on paper that you find out later that somehow or another you have to revise. My job description, for example, did not call for me to be in the pulpit. My job description calls for me to direct all the affairs of Belton and all the staff. But what staff? Making it a place that people will want to stop by. I was running around saying, who am I supposed to be directing? And I look up in Belton in Denver. Then somebody's calling me about going to the hospital. So Belton, that's a joke. He's working with the youth together, but that's why he has to go to Denver a lot. And I'm wondering around saying, the job description calls for me to direct all the affairs of the staff. I said, Belton. And they tell he's in Denver. All right. There goes the job description. So you finally find yourself something to do, don't you? You have to justify your existence. You can't be sitting there and saying, all right, when the staff come on board, then I start directing. So I had to jump in the pulpit or something, you know, to make sure. You know, you want to feel good about getting that check every 2 weeks.
Then able to be used as follow-up calls by the people that are part of the congregation. So it becomes a very lively type of ministry as far as the outreach aspect of it is concerned.
When we talk about being put up in some kind of a fair, if I had the idea of the Missouri State Fair is coming up in Sedalia later on this summer, talk about the Illinois State Fair, those are very large fairs.
Well, you don't have
and that's the kind of thing.
Right, right.
Yes. But they have to be secular in that it cannot be a church-related Sunday school picnic because our material is, you know, our focus is to reach the world of Christ. And what a better
right.
place than
okay.
a
okay.
place.
All right, yeah, you opened up a lot of stuff. And I say we've made some mistakes. And when I alluded to the fact that I was located myself at the Transfiguration Belt in that same Steve, we were really falling into that same trap. We were doing what people wanted us to do. But we also had a need to fulfill in that one of us had to be at one of the places at that particular time. And what we, even though you put 20 or more years into the ministry, you still find out when you get into a difficult situation, a new situation like I've gotten into, that you're going to make the mistake unless you clearly define your job description.
You have to work through
and once now we can step back and let the preaching pastors take on the responsibility as much as they can. We find out that we are flowing smoothly. But the rock and roll came when Transfiguration wanted all my time.
Okay, the liability.
St. Stephen's wanted all of Belton's time. Now that leaves one congregation, right? Poor little Holy Sacrament standing out there. And they're the ones complaining when we get to the parish leadership board. But we don't get no respect. Roger Danger. And they were right. It was easier to leave this congregation over here by choice. Simply because they too did not live in the community. They were elderly. They didn't have the time to get out and try to do anything. You saw something immediately going to happen here. So what you go after? You go after what you see is running.
We also keep records too.
Right?
So that we know.
And that's a mistake.
Now,
I want to say this. Pastor Young is an executive in the Northern Illinois District. That's what he knows what he's talking about as far as staffing is concerned. It's going to get more cumbersome as we pull people on.
Last year we served about 260.
And that means that job description is going to have to be so exact that nobody's running into each other.
300 fairs this year. So we expect
right.
to be very close
monthly.
To that. And then the following year
monthly.
We'll have to reevaluate it.
And that's to make sure that...
number of fairs.
At least two of them, McDaniels and Dickinson, travel quite a bit. We try to make sure that the Sundays are covered when we know that they're going to be gone. We do require them that they don't come to us on Friday saying, I forgot that I'm going
to
be out Sunday. Because that may have been that we said something to another congregation that we'll be over with you Sunday and find out that we got a conflict. So we try to avoid that.
In the sample packet will be of our literature. We have over 30 different pieces that we send them. We offer them up to 250 usually of this one item, and 30 of them. Then we also offer, as I said, items that will help people come to the booth. We have a new children's growth chart.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
charge.
This is a that's when I said I left so many out, but I didn't want to do all the talking. This is really serious. During this period, we would hope that from by the year 1992 to 2000, at least the congregations will be to the point where they will have been stabilized and mobilized to the point now where they will get their own pastor. That means we move off over to another group of churches. It doesn't mean that we're phased out unless Mission Board says so, but it simply means that we are to work ourselves out of this particular task. And move on to one, two, or three other congregations that are already out there. They are out there, Bethlehem, Zion. They're out there. They don't know they need help yet, but they do.
And in this period of mobilization, too, that means, of course, that they would
start a new congregation. Our new mission
of one of those cassette plays in just a moment or two. I want to ask you about the material itself. What the resources of the cassette material you would have? What sort of are they on topical things, or what do the resource material deal with that people would want to even pick it up?
Sure. Well, everything we have, we try to design very carefully so that there is a clear
Christian witness.
Oh, that's what I said, that we hope to get to the point where we have Luther plan number one, Luther plan number two. But that's not on the immediate horizon. In fact, when you start thinking about the staggering amount of money that it would take to pull seven in and to fully staff with the possibility of seven people, I don't think Mission Board is going to go for 14 congregations and about 14 staff people like that. I mean, that would outstrip district office. And we'll have our own little thing out there in the field. No, I don't see it operating that way, but I see it transferred off from one to the other.
That people have one thing in common, that's that they all have problems.
Was
then
there
it
ever a problem
the thought
with,
problems are
identity,
a result of sin,
who
and then the solution to problems and sin of course,
we've been
Jesus
thinking
as
about
the Lord and Savior. And through that little book that we also advertise our 800 number so that people are encouraged to give that booklet away to somebody else, and if they want more, just call us up and send them to the free of charge.
Mark, we try to
trying,
especially toward the future,
would
to target specific areas. We know that at a fair, we're going to have all kinds of people. We're going to have children, so we want some materials. The puppet cassette is one of them that will be for children. We have youth, and at this point, we're talking about trying to come up with a track that will target a specific
We had a special meeting when we finally got the three men to agree to the job descriptions that were proposed by the congregations. When we knew we had filled all three positions, we held a staff meeting. And we made sure that in the presence of the parish leadership forum that this one question was identified and answered. Who is my pastor? That's regardless of what the document says, that we are the pastors. Of the three congregations. The preaching pastor is, for all points and purposes, the pastor.
For these 300 churches.
We, and this is contrary to the job description, too. I mean, of the Luther plan. The Luther plan says that we are the ones.
Let me give out our phone numbers, and we're going to
that the preaching pastor report to. We rather turn that around.
Wonderful idea for attracting people.
We like to be the resource people.
If you'd like, if you have a question,
to assist the preaching pastor, because he's the one who says as much as possible. That's the statement that's in all those job descriptions. So that doesn't lock him in to the point where the congregation can say to him, "You promised." But as much as possible, I will try to. I will try to do this. I will try to do that. Now it's a plan. I said that works in this situation because you have so many resources in St. Louis. You can adapt this to work anywhere.
Resource services. And it's now
what is it really? What is this really adapted from? Anybody know?
Set up this cassette for us a little bit. Let us know a little bit.
No. It's a historical thing in the church.
What people are going to hear.
Oh, okay.
All right. That's one. I'm going to go back further than that.
The one that we're going to be.
When C.F.W. Walter came.
Linda,
it's the same thing. It's just an adaptation of that. He was a hair pastor, right? When these congregations were formed. This is really an adaptation of that. And one can take it and you don't have to use this. You can devise your own. Like I said, it may come accidental that you may find that this is the thing that's working.
School children and they're not understanding that that's not what you're going to do. So the stories are just about two children. One of them has three children in it. Celebrating Halloween at a Bible Halloween party, which is, you know, an interesting concept. Dressed up like Bible characters and having a good time. And then one of the children steals some candy. And the Sunday school teacher goes and talks to them. The mother, of course, finds out. Sunday school teacher goes and talks to this boy, and this boy was one of the other stories.
Mm-hmm.
Was a brand new.
Right, and we must be realists too. That Pastor Belton is a very skilled man. I respect him very much, but I have to know that there's a time coming when he's going to get a call. And I happen to know that he wants his own congregation. So when and you know, if that happens, we just have to face the possibility that we just have to go back and start over again. Call someone else to the plan.
I've had the privilege of being in a parish and coming into this situation. Believe me, it's different. Because I too feel the urge, who am I, pastor? You know, when I know, I don't know how you felt when you left the parish and you went into your executive position. But coming into this position, and I found out I don't have a church that I can really call my own. I'm supposed to be pastor of all these congregations, and still somebody else come and say, I'm the preaching pastor. In their nursery at church, they can find. And you're used to having your own little group, you know, together there that you say you're the pastor. So it's a difference. It's different for Vic. It's different for me. I'm not likely to go anywhere, but he is. And God knows who's going to assume some of these other responsibilities here on this list. But we hope and pray to God that that the work will continue. And you're right, the inner city, the urban scene is where it's at. We got this pancake, I like to call it the pancake effect, where we got people pile up on each other, and not they not pile up on each other, they're facing so many difficulties in the community. And we're not doing a very good ministry with them. If we can reach some of the young ladies who have been caught up in misused in life, some drug addict and so forth, we meet them every day, particularly at Transfiguration. People who are shelterless, people who are homeless, you know, who have no clothes, who come looking for food. And sometimes they come with reeking of liquor on their breath. And they're asking for food, you have to make a good, hard judgment. Sometimes you're going to be right, sometimes you're going to be wrong. You can always surmise that they don't need it simply because they have the liquor on the breath. But I advise you to understand that it's easier in the urban scene to get liquor than it is to get food. People will share liquor. And if you got a nickel, you can pull together enough nickels to get a bottle of wine. But it's hard to pull together enough nickels to get some food. That was a mystery. Young ladies in the community, we must realize that this is a fact of life where you don't have a nuclear family. And when you have a nuclear family, for that matter, there's still going to be difficulties with pregnancy, unwanted pregnancies. Sex isn't going away. I didn't mean it that way. Dope isn't going anywhere. Right? Dope is really the incentive of the people in the community to release themselves from the bad life that they experience. Yeah, I told some 13-year-old now I could buy you a car. But see, that's the only life they know. It's a life that's going to eventually lead them to the gutter. Because only they have to only make one mistake. Don't bring that money in. And money, you know, when you got a lot of it, you see a lot of it in your hand, you can say, well, I can abscond with this, not long. The drug pusher finds you. And guess what? The law will say, that's a fact of life. If you're not right there with the gun in your hand and powder buns on your arm. Thank you for loving me so much.
You came to earth and died in my place. You suffered for me. Then you rose again from the dead. He was proved to those who saw you that you were alive. Convince me of that fact also, and help my unbelief.
Oh.
Lift me up, strengthen me, and continue to build my faith and trust in you. Amen.
What does it do? How does it function?
Okay.
That's
one of the
what kind of authority does it
stories
actually
and
all right.
Voices, the children
meets every Wednesday of each month, 6 to 8. We give 2 hours to it. Considering the fact that the group has the option of going beyond the 2 hours. But we usually set from 6 to 8. As a rule, we usually meet at St. Stephen because it's easy on people walking. They can come right into the church instead of going up steps. That's the reason we hold it there. The authority and the limitations they have. It's an advisory group. Advisory group through me to Pastor Lane. In other words, there's a ministry that they want, a particular ministry that they want to go get involved in that's going to take some support from the district. They give it to me, I take it to Pastor Lang. That's the way that goes. But he and the mission board ultimately has the final decision if it has to be funded. But if there's no funding involved and it's within, you know, common practice of the church, that board has option to run.
They have their own chair.
Yes. Story, yes. By the way, which happens to be a woman.
They coordinate any joint projects?
As I mentioned, the only...
And they also have your comes with puppets?
Other than these Advent Lent services that I mentioned, no. That's resulted in anything that's, you know, that's been called good and really togetherness. Mention the picnic. That they promised to do. I think maybe that'll run, but I still have to see it.
This whole concept has yeah. behind it.
But it's really an inspirational ministry, and you see so many good things happening. You see some hurts. It's not been easy. It's hard to change. The waste mentality of all is what I call that spiritual welfare syndrome. When everything is done for you, when a preacher comes in on Sunday and you don't have to pay him because he says he knows you, I know you don't have any money. That's a bad thing for a congregation. Because the congregation never will be in a position to pay, really. The workers' weather is high. I don't think the preacher comes to get paid. But as long as you come and you preach to this congregation that says, and the preacher himself says, I know you don't have any money, you'd like for somebody to come and clean your house up for that kind of stuff, huh? Wouldn't you? I ought to go to the mission board and say, we behind in our utilities this month by $3,000 or whatever dollars. And the mission board says, oh, here, go ahead and pay it off. And pay it. But is that really good in the long run? Sometimes this is necessary. I understand that. It's necessary that we face up to the issues that it takes this worldly stuff that we're dealing with money to operate our churches. But I also suggest that people have money. People in this area that's supposed to be in the low economic brackets as of now can't afford to do anything they want to do.
Absolutely.
If they want to do it.
Any type of attempt at passive evangelism is only as good as what the follow-up will be later on, because people have to be nurtured. So this is always designed to give everyone the items that we use.
Mm-hmm.
It's 27 after the hour of 2 o'clock, and again, if any of our listeners have some questions, or maybe want to share an experience with your group that's been involved.
Yeah, let me say one closing thing. Are we pretty much at the end? You through already, aren't you?
Myself.
All right, let me say just say something about this Kinlock situation. How many of you know anything about Kinlock? Well, most of you. Most of you know about Kinlock. You know that it's right off of, I don't know what that 47Z or what, it's right off the runway. Scared me half to death when I first preached out there. You know, Kinlock is right next to the airport, that's what I'm trying to say. And here comes a 747, right over the pulpit. And you can literally, you know, just count the spokes in the wheels as it's going down to the runway. Well, Kinlock, to make a long story short, is being discussed as a possibility of being bought out by the airport, runway extended and all that kind of stuff. Every airport wants to expand. But there are a number of Christians out there, Lutheran Christians, who really want to keep that ministry going. They right up here in stagnation. What hope they have in surviving that airport, I think that's null and void. I don't think they have any there. But somehow or another, that's a ministry too that can be relocated. You can relocate ministries. And I keep telling them that you don't have to give up because you lose a building. The building does not make the church. You can meet in somebody's basement. You can meet in some hall. Wherever you can get a place. Sometimes funeral homes will let you come in. Because they think it's exposure. Really? They enjoy you coming in and using that chapel. People see you coming in now, they say, well, they're operating over there. Got false notions about how people do things. But we hope and pray that your ministry, whatever it may be done in such a way that you really appreciate it. And if it's in either stage here, well,
this is the bad side here. But wherever it may be, if it's over here and your people are motivated, they really want to get something done, and they want to move towards stabilization and mobilization, and you use every means possible whereby you can get that done.
This is amazing to me. You know, here, you have such a service.
Is that about a whale or whatever?
And it's a free service.
I thank you for listening to me.
Are any field workers involved in it?
Oh, yeah, one at St. Peter's.
Members of the International Mission Labor League throughout the world, actually, and it's their